I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss discrepancies in discipline and grades for African American students in Clark County, and this week's Oconee County Candidates Forum and the upcoming special elections. Those topics and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Blake Odd from Flagpole, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, and local attorney and business owner Russell Edwards. So, of course, thank you all for joining me. And Russell, good to have you on the show again.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with the discrepancy in the Clark County schools before we move on to more political topics. There was a huge discrepancy when it came to grades and discipline. The number of suspensions for African American students seem much higher than other students. I know you had a particular concern with this, Gwen.
Yes, I think it's really crucial that our school systems are the doors to the community, the doors to society, and they're the doors to the future of our community. They determine what kind of people, citizens, workers, contributors we're going to be able to have as we move into the future. And it really concerns me. We have a majority African-American school system, and at this point we're not serving the majority of our students on a level that we did. Our graduation rates, we bragged on those last time we talked about this, and yeah, we have good reason to be bragging about the changes that have occurred. Now what we need to do, and this is what our superintendent Mean has talked with the board prior to their meeting, last meeting, about, was the importance of reaching down and maximizing the opportunities and the achievements of young people that are coming from different backgrounds.
The issue that I see that fails to get addressed when we start talking about the gap of achievement, with the racial gap and the gap socioeconomically between the students from different classes of families. You see students from wealthier families performing better at school. You see children from poorer families performing worse. That, to me, speaks to the fact that Athens, Georgia, has a propensity of large-scale employers that pay very low wages. We have a phenomenal unemployment rate. You know, go talk to our mayor. Wow, we've got the greatest unemployment rate in the state. We're doing great. But we have a poverty rate that's 38%. So right there, that tells me there's a lot of folks working jobs, but they're not getting paid. And if they aren't getting paid, they're working two or three jobs.
That's right.
To try to get by. And so what we have here are students in our system that are facing a dilemma. They either have a lack of attention because their parents are working two or three jobs to try to get by to put food on the table, or they're suffering from a lack of nutrition because their parents aren't bringing home enough money to get food in the pantry. So, you know, I think we can talk about the structure of the school day and the testing or whatever, but to really get to the core issue, we have students and children in this community that are suffering because of the low wages being paid to their parents. They're suffering from a lack of nutrition or a lack of attention.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, we have kids who are coming to school hungry. We have kids who are homeless. We have kids who move schools throughout the school year because they're, you know, maybe they're couch surfing, or maybe, you know, their parents are just looking for a better deal on rent. But, you know, they're not consistently in one school. They transfer within the system in the school year, during the school year.
Mm-hmm. And that's related. Transience is a huge part of poverty.
Right. And so, you know, not a stable home life. And that issue also is related to the failures that the school districts had in the past. I mean, when we were talking about this with Commissioner Gertz last week, he mentioned that the graduation rate, you know, 10 or 15 years ago was 50%, closer to 50%. So those people now, they're parents. So we have a group of people who have a very low level of education in this community, and that is part of why we have so many low-wage jobs in this community and all of the problems that you just talked about a minute ago. And the number one indicator, the studies would tell you that the number one indicator whether a child will succeed in school is the education level of the parents.
Right.
So when you have parents who didn't graduate from high school, you know, their kids are less likely to succeed in school as well.
Well, and you know, but I was brought up to believe that there is dignity in all work. So if you're running a cash register at Kroger, if you're mopping the floors at the University of Georgia, there's dignity in all work. And our major employers should take that to heart and should recognize that they have some responsibility to support this community by paying a wage that will support the children at home. And some of the wealthiest businesses and enterprises in this community simply aren't paying a wage that supports children to a sufficient degree where we can expect them to perform at school. You know, Athens-Clark County has taken steps. The government is now paying all their employees a living wage. So we've come to the table as a community and as a government.
University of Georgia has raised their, I mean, we used to always point to them.
Okay, but they raised it. What did they raise it to? You know, I think it's something like $22,000 a year. I mean, is that
enough? Well, their
enough?
Hourly wage is a living wage. It's 11. It's at 11.
You know, well, I don't want to call out names, but it's right. Obvious when you have a poverty rate of 38%, but an unemployment rate of 4.8%.
Yeah,
we
and
have
so
too many low-paying jobs.
90% of those people in poverty are working.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, you have to look at the state that we're living in. This is also, it's a reflection of their state because they prohibited living wage to be a municipal decree. They completely prohibited that.
Yeah.
They sell us as a cheap labor state. They brag all over. Look at Amazon right now.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, we have a stupid package. Amazon is never going to come here because of religious liberty and all the other far-right things
and
in our legislation.
And no transit and our immigration policy.
Right. I think they will go to Canada. I don't really, you know, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we sell ourselves as a cheap labor state.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the employers come and take advantage of that, we all are left dealing with the problems that these low wages bring. And one of those problems is disparities in student performance.
It's a school district that really almost is like a two-tiered school district.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at these numbers, you know, the number of students who are proficient in math or English, I'm just going to throw Chase Street out there because I can recall it off the top of my head because that's the district that I'm in. But I think it was 92% of white students, you know, are proficient, and 14% of African American students. Mm. Now that's an extreme example.
That is the most extreme.
That was the most extreme,
the
and that's why it stands out in my head.
Right.
Yeah. But it's all across the district. It's almost every school is district wide that you know it's two or three times higher for white students than African American students.
Right.
It just
and Latino students being somewhere in the middle.
You know, one of the saddest things to me was the discrepancy in discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think that kids' willingness to obey rules and be a part of things has a lot to do with how much attention they got at home, how much their family was at home.
Attention.
You know, like you were saying, you're right. All the studies showed and have for over 20 years now that our people are working more than one job. They're doing a good job of being employed. They're just not making a living wage, and they're not home to help these kids. But can they help them, like you brought up? We have a history of low graduation rates, of that bifurcated system. But the discipline really bothers me because I think it reflects like I said, a lack of discipline at home and being raised to be able to sit still, et cetera.
But it's not the parents' fault, right? It's not the parents' fault.
I think parents do.
But that's irrelevant because, we've got to educate these kids regardless of what's going on at home.
That's right. But it's a lack of hope. These kids don't have hope. I had a young eight-year-old the other day tell me that he hated Athens. Mm. And so I sat down with him and said, why do you hate Athens? Mm. And he felt like that Athens didn't have any potential for him, that he couldn't go anywhere. He was 8 years old, and you wouldn't believe how proficient he was in saying that he had no hope.
Mm. That's a bleak outlook for
someone. It's a bleak outlook for an eight-year-old, and it really upset me. And kids cannot learn when they are being suspended,
Well, and I think, pointing to ways that we can help, I think that the Athens-Clark County Mentor Program has done a great job, bringing people from the community and partnering them with people in the schools, students in the school, to create some more attention, to give more attention, to create some more support.
And opportunities to see the other part of it. Some of these kids have never been to the Linden House. They've never been to the zoo. They've never been to anywhere. Yeah.
We have a lot of great programs. That's true. Obviously, whatever we're doing is not it's not very effective because we still have this huge problem. So what Dr. Means, the superintendent, is talking about is now that he's gotten in there and he's been on the job for a few months, he just wants to basically just throw everything out and start over again. He wants to go back to basics. He's got a very different style than Phil Lanoue. Phil was all about innovation and creativity and just, try anything, whatever, gave a lot of autonomy to his principals, to experiment, which, obviously we didn't really come up with much that worked,
It's kind of a PR operation.
He did raise our graduation rate to 80% from 50.
Well, and 50. Part of that, too, is the state, keeps changing the way that we calculate graduation rates. So that's part of what bumped it up. We talked last week about this graduation rate is Lanoue's legacy and whatever. I mean, fine, but there's another side to that.
Right.
We're doing this on this is the, I mean, to be perfectly blunt, this is the middle class white kids, mm-hmm. Who are succeeding, who are the ones that are raising this graduation rate. Mm. And he did do a great job of PR of, convincing middle class white parents that it was okay to send their kids to Clark County Public Schools. Mm-hmm.
And that was real important.
That's important, but it didn't solve the issue of the achievement gap.
Right.
So, Dr. Means wants to go back to basics. He wants to start over. He wants to, equalize all of the schools so that the policies are the same, find what works and implement it, throughout the district and not have one school doing one thing, one school doing another thing.
Right.
So that no matter what neighborhood you live in, you get the same quality of education, regardless of your income level, regardless of your neighborhood, regardless of what school you go to.
Right.
So that's for the achievement discrepancies and the achievement gap. Would you say for discipline, would you say bias would play into some of the rate?
We need to be working more with parents. I really believe we've got to affect and help, and I love Means' idea about making the school the community center, mm-hmm. making it what, and that was the, prior to integration, the black schools were the center of their communities. They were the most expected. I want to bring up the state again about this. Our state used to require 40 tests under Deal. Now they've worked with him over the years, and it's gone down to 20, but that's still almost twice what the feds require. And testing is not teaching. I think we've learned that over the years. From George Bush on, we've learned that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be very interesting. I really believe that Deal is a part of that Republican push to privatize education, and I don't mean public education. I mean they want to think of it as a business and turn it over to the. He's trying to get private sector people to come in here and write the test.
Yeah.
How? That's mm-hmm. just amazing to me.
Betsy DeVos. I mean, the Republican appointed education secretary in Washington, D.C., it's a clear priority of hers as well. To, you know, there's the school of thought among the Republicans, you know, you look at where the big pots of money go in society. Well, the military is a huge pot. Well, they've privatized a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
The prison system, that's a big pot. Well, they've privatized a lot of that. Right. Public schools is kind of the final frontier.
Homeland security. Yeah.
Roads, toll roads. So it's sort of whittling down the publicly managed and operated infrastructure
I don't think we can blame what's happening in Clark County on any of that. I'm sorry. You know, this is not Betsy DeVos's fault.
No, no.
She's been in office for 9 months.
But I do think that testing is not teaching, and that we have changed our school year to accommodate testing. We, you know, there just has been a lot of emphasis on testing that I don't think has helped our young people like school better or learn better.
Mm-hmm. And we don't want to hear another 8-year-old say they hate.
Right, that they hate Athens.
I think that, you know, what Dr. Means is talking about, I think he's on the right track, though, because he wants to take a holistic view of education and put all of the resources that we have in this community, which are substantial,
yes,
to work for a common goal.
Yes.
You know, and we have a problem here in this community, I think, where, you know, we have a lot of people who are doing a lot of great work, but the left hand doesn't always know what the right hand is doing. And so I think getting everybody singing from the same hymn book and working together collaboratively is going to go a long way towards, that's really the only way that we can move forward.
We also have a couple other things we want to get to. The Oconee County Candidate Forum. I know you attended, Russell, and you found it very interesting.
I did. I believe it's the first opportunity we've had to see all the candidates in one place and answering questions from the crowd. You know, it was an interesting format. There were no pre-prepared questions. They introduced the candidates and threw it to the crowd. So they had the 119 district go first, which includes part of South and East Athens-Clarke County, and then a lot of Oconee County, Watkinsville, sort of the heart of the district. 50% of the voters, though, come from Athens-Clarke County. This is the district formerly held by Chuck Williams. Trump carried this district by 6 points only, so this is a district that is targeted by Democrats to flip, and they've been encouraged by all the other special elections throughout the nation where Democrats have outperformed Trump by 20, 30 points in places like New Hampshire and Oklahoma to flip some really red districts. So we had 3 Republicans running in that race right now: Tom Lord from Lord & Stevens, Marcus Wiedauer, a contractor with Blueprint Construction, Stephen Strickland, a tech guy, and Jonathan Wallace is the sole Democrat. He's a software developer. So, you know, my impression was they all pretty much towed the party line. But the moment, I mean, I asked a question, and I asked them, if the election were held tomorrow, would you vote to reelect Trump? Or would you maybe vote for somebody different, like Hillary Clinton or whoever? And all of the Republicans just very stridently remarked that they would support Trump. They stand by Trump. They voted for Trump. You know, so and there was an audible gasp.
Who did they vote for?
Trump.
Okay.
Trump.
Just
Trump,
want to make
Trump,
sure.
All over. They were loving on Trump. They were loving it, too. I mean, it wasn't like you know, he's done some things. It's no. I'm a Trump guy. He's doing what's right for this country. And there were some audible gasps in the crowd. I mean, still. I mean, it's like,
and
golly,
if I remember correctly, Trump didn't even win the Republican primary in Oconee County. I think Marco Rubio won, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think so. Marco Rubio won in Athens.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I'm not surprised. I think the Republican Party has been very clear, and they get in touch with these people, and they talk to them, and they are they're heavy hitters. They tell them, you know, you stay inside the corral, or you will be an outlier that will not be supported.
It's the party of Trump now. I mean, you can't go against Trump in an election if you're a Republican. I mean, you're gonna, you know, the math is, you know, if you go against Trump, maybe you can gain a few moderates, but you're gonna lose all of those diehard Trump voters, and the math just doesn't work. So you have to be You know, and in the other race, I mean, District 117, Houston Gaines, the Republican, is trying to thread that needle. And, you know, I don't really think it's working for him. His answer to that question was a little bit vague. I mean, he didn't really say whether he would vote for Trump again. He said he supports Trump's policies.
Tax reform.
Specifically tax reform, but policies in general.
He doesn't even know what it is yet.
Well, he doesn't have a tax reform policy.
It's kind of...
You know, there's no legislation at this point. Yeah. But, you know, you just can't... You can't get away with that in this day and age. Everyone has a strong opinion.
Yeah, because
about the guy.
Even Gaines, I mean, his words were, he didn't say, I would vote for Trump. He said... I support the president and the policies that he's moving forward with. So, and again, there was an audible gasp. You know, here's this 22-year-old who just left the University of Georgia as the student body president, where he circulated the petition that basically started the Athens Civil Rights Movement. You know, where
he did a lot of work on the bar discrimination issue.
He worked on the bar discrimination issue. He worked to create safe spaces for the reporting of sexual assault.
You know, and of course, running a Democrats campaign.
He ran the Democrats campaign.
He started out with this sort of aura of bipartisanship, and now
we were thinking he was going to be a Democrat.
But now that he's being nailed down on the issues, you know, he's pro Second Amendment, pro. Gun rights, anti-abortion, you know, just
he's
on down the
choice.
Line,
yeah.
He has these really, you know, typical Republican positions on the issues.
Well, I'm glad to see that he's upfront about where he's standing on something, because that to me is what's important.
Well, but I mean, there's some things that he's been a little wishy-washy about. I mean, I don't think we've gotten a straight answer about campus carry from him.
The campus carry question. I thought Jonathan Wallace did a good job answering that for 119. He said, look, this is an issue of local control. We had every single university and college president come out against this thing. And to my knowledge, all of the police chiefs of all the universities said, no. All the faculty senates, faculty union, no. Yeah. And a lot of students, you know, big student movement against this thing, too. So despite all of the local movement against this, the folks in Atlanta decided they pass it.
And,
so,
and the fact that I think it was polling at about 26% or something like that.
Yeah, super
statewide.
Low. Yeah.
You know, well, and we ran a story this week in Flagpole, you know, where we went out and talked to a bunch of tailgaters, and we couldn't find a single one who thought it was a good idea. And these are gun owners. These aren't people, Athens liberals. These are guys from, you know, Forsyth County and Mississippi and Texas and, you know, all kinds of
if you can get the names of the NRA reps that they'll use to get money to our legislators, you will have an understanding of what they were listening to more. The money, amount of money that the NRA puts into state legislators and to judgeships, lots of judgeships now. We're, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, Bill Kousert voted against it. Regina Quick voted for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Regina voted for it before she voted against it.
Yeah.
The second
she voted for it, but then when the final vote came, she decided there were too many exemptions. So she wanted more campus.
It didn't go far enough.
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well.
And Deborah Gonzalez was there as well.
Yes, so. And she did a great job from what I've heard. She's not a raving Democrat. She is a very practical.
Well, she's taken some pretty liberal positions. I mean, $15 minimum wage.
That's really not,
you know,
that
I mean,
liberal.
That's out of
that's
the Bernie
what, exactly
playbook.
What we were talking about a while ago. Yeah. That our town, that's exactly what our state needs right now to start attracting businesses that pay people what they can afford to not only feed their children, but to be with their children and to raise their children.
Well, Ms. Gonzalez, she came to my defense. I mean, I was attacked at the forum for supposedly, you know, this issue of Mayor Denson getting her membership revoked from the Clark County Democratic Committee. And I thought Ms. Gonzalez addressed it very succinctly that, look, this is a club management issue. When you join a club, you have bylaws, and when you violate a bylaw, You must go. I'm sorry. I mean, Mayor Denson
was... Well, you can stay in the club, but you shouldn't be a leader of the club.
Nancy Denson was an office holder. She was a post holder on the committee hosting a large-scale public fundraiser for someone who we now know is supportive of Donald Trump's policies. I mean, and it wasn't just Mayor Denson. It was many prominent Athenians who we thought would be left-leaning, you know, perhaps. It's a remarkable moment here in Athens, Georgia.
That's how Regina Quick got elected.
That's how Regina Quick got elected.
But there was no Democrat in that race.
That's how Paul Brown got elected.
That is true.
Sometimes Democrats play in Republican politics.
And now what you're seeing is there are a lot of Republicans who are now very outraged that the Democrats would do this to Nancy Denson, who has served our community for so long.
I haven't
seen so many. Which is really funny to me because, I mean, they're Republicans, and they're so very upset about, you know, why do they care?
Man, I've never had so many Oconee County Republicans upset with me. And I'm like, look, this is not me.
This is why we have nonpartisan races, is because of Doc Eldridge's problems with getting elected.
Well, but now this is a partisan race, though. I mean, this is a...
No, but the mayor's race was not... What I'm saying is that's why we have nonpartisan, is because there were a lot of Republicans
that wanted to get in there.
They wanted to get in there.
But when we had partisan races, I mean, everybody, you know, Doc, who was a Republican, ran as a Democrat because everyone ran as a Democrat, so...
We are now in a situation where we are electing our mayor in May. Yeah. I mean,
right,
that is ridiculous.
But that happened after nonpartisan elections.
No, it happened. It couldn't have happened to us if we were not nonpartisan.
Well,
no, it couldn't. It could not have happened if we were not.
What I'm saying is that happened. You know, we got nonpartisan elections, I think, in 2004, and what you're talking about happened in.
I know, but well, what happened to us immediately was that
2012.
Immediately, what happened to us when we went to nonpartisan was that we had to have runoffs that occurred after Thanksgiving and had a very small turnout. Our turnout has declined
big time.
Immensely because of the confusion related to the two different electoral systems that we operate on.
Right.
But the primaries were in May when we had partisan elections.
No.
And everything was decided in the Democratic primary, and that was in May. You couldn't get elected as a Republican, and so you had Republicans like Doc who were running as Democrats because that was the only way to win. That primary was in May. So I don't understand why, you know, everyone being a Democrat and running in May or nonpartisan in May, I don't understand the difference between
the two. Nonpartisan election occurs in May.
But the primary, like it's very the partisan different. Primaries
no,
were,
the
were
numbers,
also in May.
The numbers between those that go to the polls in May and those that go to the polls.
Gwen, I understand that. What I'm saying is that the partisan primaries that we used to have were also in May. Well, and that was what decided the election, because it was decided in the Democratic primary in May.
Let me introduce another line of thought.
No,
let me say one point, though. When you have party identification, sure, maybe you force some people in there, but you allow the voters the opportunity to kind of know, oh, this person is a member of the party, the Democratic Party. I have a general idea of what that party's values are. So it helps voter education, voter knowledge, to at least have some loose association with the party.
Okay, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Gwen Olooney, Blake Odd, and Russell Edward. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of Flagpole, WXAG, or the station. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.